0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Limelight. Teresa Bourne. Teresa, how are you doing today?
Hi, John. Fine, thank you.
You're having a tough time, you say. I never forget the day my husband, Billy, was diagnosed. Will you tell us about that day?
Yeah, that's true. Well, he had his scans and all done, and we were out having some lunch in the Arklow Bay Hotel.
Yeah.
And the GP had rang me to confirm, yes, he definitely has dementia. Yeah. So I got into the car, and on our way home, I just said to him, I said, Billy, you know, you do have dementia. It's been confirmed. And he just started crying, you know. And I thought to myself, well, don't let him get deep into this because you'd sink. So I just looked at him and I said, what are you crying for? Are you in pain? He said, no. And I said, well, what's the matter? And he just says, well, you'll have to listen to a lot of rubbish and utter bull out of me from here on in. So I just said, Billy, I've news for you. I've been listening to it all my life, so it's not going to change. Yeah. So that got him out of that situation.
But he's cried a lot since, you say.
Oh, he has, yeah. He's at a very bad stage of it now. He is at the present moment, he's in Loughlinstown Hospital.
Okay.
He had been in St. Coleman's on a week's respite, and he was ever so happy, really, really happy in himself, singing and dancing and everything. And then I took him home, and he was just crying and crying and afraid, this constant thing of fear. And then he was, you know, trying to walk through glass doors and not able to manage the stairs as such, and started imagining things. He's seen people that was dead and gone, like, and he was imagining they were in the house and, you know, the normal things that would happen to a person with Alzheimer's, you know.
And when you say the walking through the glass doors, is that accidental? Does he know where they are?
Because he wasn't, you see, he's not aware. Genuinely not, he can't, his brain doesn't tell him.
Yeah.
No, this and is what, dangerous. Or,
and another really upsetting aspect of this is that, what age was Billy when he was diagnosed?
Billy has it 14 years and he's 67 this year.
Oh, my God. 53.
Yeah, so he got it pretty early.
And what was happening that led to the diagnosis, Teresa, 14 years ago?
Billy, first of all, I might as well tell you, Billy's a very outgoing man, very funny, such a lovable, kind person, great character. But I noticed, like, he kept repeating and repeating himself.
Okay.
And then he was hiding things. He was hiding, you know, silly things like crisps, chocolate bars, biscuits. He had a little stash hid behind his couch.
Yeah.
And then he just came home one day and he said something totally, totally wrong. And I had made the appointment then with the GP.
And did you suspect? At 53, did you suspect dementia, Teresa?
Yeah, I did. Because working with it, you know, you kind of see the telltale signs. Because I was saying to my children, I think Billy might have Alzheimer's. And they were laughing and saying, oh, Ma, leave him alone, like he hasn't. But I was right.
So that was 14 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And Billy's been at home until quite recently, has he?
Yes, yes. I've managed Billy at home for 14 years, held down a job, looked after him. He's been pretty happy. It's just that it's the final stage where he's really afraid. He needs 24/7 care, you know, which I cannot give to him.
Yeah, of course. But you have been caring for him for how many years now, Teresa?
Oh, from the beginning of it, from the beginning of it. I had kind of hoped that I could have him with me straight to the very end of his journey, but unfortunately, I can't.
Of course. And am I getting mixed up when I see that you're a home care worker yourself? You mean you were going out every day to look after other people as well?
Yes, that's right. I love my job. I work for Wicklow Community Family Service. And I have to say, they've been ever so good to me with the predicament with Billy. If I need time off, they give it to me and everything. And they're absolutely wonderful to work for.
But you're telling me that you're at home minding Billy. And I know that's what you want to do. But then for your work, to try and get some money, I presume, you went out and were minding other people.
Yes, I've been doing it for years, yes. And I love it. It's a very fulfilling job. And I love all of the people I go into. It's absolutely wonderful.
No, the point that's striking me so strongly is that you're at home minding Billy, who you obviously love, and it's obviously deeply and reciprocated. But then I thought, if you were going out to work, would you not want a break? Would you not do something else that might give you a break from looking after people all the time? But no, you go out to look after other people, and you love that as well.
Yeah, I love it. I couldn't even describe the feeling that you get after coming out of a house most times, you know, after helping someone. Mm. And these people that you're going into, you build up a beautiful relationship with them, you know, and it's like going into your granny or something like that, you know, or your grandfather. It's absolutely lovely. And then the upsetting part is, whenever they have to go away or they pass on, it just breaks your heart.
Teresa, who were you called after? Saint Teresa of the Roses, I presume.
I don't think so. Unless she's been converted. No, definitely not.
Saint Therese of Lisieux. Billy is now in hospital and you're trying to get him into a nursing home. We'll talk about that in a sec. But are you still doing the other home care work?
Yes, I was out this morning and I'm back tomorrow.
And many hours a week are you doing?
Well, because I was doing the caring for Billy, I was Billy's carer, I was only allowed to do the 17 hours a week.
Yeah.
But now that Billy's gone, I'll be back into it full swing.
As well as going up to Billy in a nursing home or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, so where are we now in terms of full-time residential care for Billy?
Right. Well, the predicament is that Billy, everything was sanctioned for the fair deal. It's all been signed and everything. And we were going to put Billy in May, and I had the bed pre-booked. But then it wasn't sanctioned at that stage, so we had to let the bed go. And now that it's booked, now that it's passed, like there is no beds available out there. So at the present moment, the only other option that was left open to me was to bring Billy up to Loughlinstown, which is wonderful. And
the hospital,
Yes, and they assess them and they have him there, and they will have to keep him there until they find a bed in a nursing home for him.
Okay. And have you, like some hospitals have, they've stepped down beds. They've reserved beds in different nursing homes. Do you know what ones might be available to Loughlinstown? And will you get a say in where he goes, Teresa?
Well, I'm hoping to, because Billy was so happy in St. Coleman's. He knew everyone there and they all knew him and loved him. So we had his name down for there.
Where is he? Just tell me where that is. Sorry, I don't.
St. Coleman's, it's in Rathdrum.
Okay. And do you live near there? Is it near where you live?
Well, it's about 10 miles up from us.
You've got to think of you visiting as well.
Exactly. And in the meantime, if they find an alternative bed in a different nursing home, they'll possibly put him into that until a bed becomes vacant in St. Coleman's. But there is a waiting list.
Yeah, of course.
And this is the, like, it's not just for Billy. Like, I just feel, personally, I feel myself that, right, we're listening to it and seeing it, you know, there's money being thrown into hospitals, which is needed. Don't get me wrong, I'm not taking anything back. And there's money being thrown into other different areas. But what about the elderly? These are old people. These people, they paved our pathways in this world. Yeah. And just because they've gotten old now, it's like as if they're just thrown into the corner and being told, oh, you're no longer of service to us. You may just sit there and stay there until we do something. Yeah. And, you know, and it just sometimes it makes me cross.
Yeah, that's fully understandable. What is the Children's Hospital up to now? 2 billion, I think.
Yeah, you know. And
only 27 out of 400 beds finished. Anyway, we can only get down on our hands and knees and pray that this Children's Hospital, which we so badly need, keeps... I'm sure everyone is genuine. Just please get it finished. Please get it open. And please get it finished properly. Don't cut corners.
Yeah, crazy. Up to it.
Now, Teresa, tell me what you'd like, because I'm thinking of people who are looking for nursing homes and look for. What do you like about St. Coleman's? Obviously, location for a start, that helps.
Yeah. What I like about St. Coleman's is, right, because Billy had attended the daycare centre there,
okay,
he knows the people
around
him, okay? The staff in St. Coleman's, as I'm sure is in every other nursing home, the staff are beautiful.
Okay.
Absolutely beautiful. He feels so at home and so relaxed there. It's a home away from home. And it leaves it that I'm happy when I leave him. Because, Joe, I don't think anyone understands, unless they're going through it or have gone through it themselves, to get your loved one, like Billy's my world. Billy is my soulmate. Okay. And for to get your loved one and having to bring them to a nursing home and leave them in a nursing home knowing this is the end. It's heartbreaking. But then for to have to bring them into a hospital setting first and leave them there for a while and upset them again and bring them back to a nursing home, like, it's just horrible. It's horrible.
And when Billy was crying, Teresa, nonstop, did he fully understand why he was crying? Did he say to you, I don't know why I'm crying, or I can't stop?
He wasn't. Yeah, he just could not stop crying. And when you'd ask him what he was crying for, he'd say, I don't know, I don't know. Yeah. And then after a while, he'd say to me, Teresa, help, I'm afraid. And you'd ask him what he's afraid of, and he doesn't know. And like, Joe, even going back to it there, when I brought him down into the ward and I was leaving him, you know, and gave him a kiss and a hug goodbye and, you know, said, I love you, I'll be up tomorrow to see you. He stood up and he shouted as I was coming out through the door, Teresa, and I looked back and there he was crying. And I said, oh, honey, and he says, if I die tonight, just remember how much I love you.
Oh, my God.
Like, that is heartbreaking for anyone to come away like that.
Oh, God. Now, tell us how you get on with the Fair Deal, because I know the Fair Deal is hard sometimes, but everything, and maybe you'll check me, everything I hear about the people who run the Fair Deal in the HSE, they are full of compassion, they do their best. Now, the rules are the rules, unfortunately. How did you get on with Fair Deal?
I got on absolutely brilliant. Now, I'll have to be honest. Now, there was a lot of paperwork
to be done.
But I had continuously rang up and all of that. And I found that they were very, very helpful. Really helpful.
And you're now eligible for the Fair Deal scheme.
So we were passed there at the end of May.
Okay, great. So that means once a bed becomes available in a nursing home, between your own contribution and the Fair Deal, and then there's conditions, obviously, if God forbid, something happens within a certain time, there's money to be paid and all that carry on. When, by the way, where did you meet? I'm bowled over. It's wonderful to hear.
Where did I meet? Well, Billy's my second husband and I'm Billy's second wife.
Okay.
So okay. Both of us got the second chance.
That's brilliant. Brilliant.
We were lucky enough to get second chance in life. I was out socialising one night and I had met him then. I was just talking to him and then we met again and it just clicked. And we've been together ever since.
That's fantastic. Now, you're not giving me much detail, are you, Teresa? You're not giving me much to go on. Were you, did you go? Would you meet him in a pub? Did you meet him at a lecture picnic? Where did you meet?
No. We met in a pub. Met in a pub. It was up in Roundwood, actually.
Oh, lovely. The Roundwood Inn, was it?
Caveness.
Caveness, down the street there. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. That's where we met. And
you just start chatting?
Just started chatting away. I would have known his brother, Pat, you know. So that was it then. We've been together ever since, thank God.
Magic.
We've had lovely memories, great time.
And I know this is the wrong milestone to look at it because the last 14 years, you the two of you have shown such love for each other. But how long were you together before that lunch in the Arklow Bay when you got the phone call and you said to Billy that GP has confirmed you have got dementia and he started crying, not for himself, but for you? How long had you been together at that stage, Teresa?
Since before he was diagnosed.
Yes, sorry. Yeah.
I'm with Billy for 27 years now.
Okay. So it's about you were about 13 or 14 years together before the second phase moved in, which is also now 14 years. And please God, there'll be another 14. Can I ask, Teresa, children, do you have children between you or?
No. Billy has two, and I have six. I've three boys, three girls. Billy took on my children, loves them. They never wanted for much, you know, what Billy had. Yeah. He would give whatever he could do for them. He did. Loves all the grandchildren. They absolutely dote on him, you know. And when they come into the house now and see if his chair is there and there's no Billy, they'd be looking, where's Billy? Billy?
Yeah. And we know you worked outside the home as well as a home care worker. What did Billy work at outside the home?
Billy was a lorry driver. He was a great lorry driver,
For who?
He worked for a few. He worked for Kevin Devlin, Kilcool.
Okay.
He worked for John Gregory, Kilmechanic. He worked for Vincent Cousins there in Barndarrick.
And was he all over? Was he driving all over the country, or mainly around Wicklow?
Yeah, just all over the country.
Okay. Stay there, Teresa. 51551 is our text number, Joe, at rt.ie. Brenda Buckley, Brenda, you're listening. Brenda, you want to say?
Yes, I am, Joe.
You want first of all, I know you want to say hello to Teresa, and then just give us your situation.
I do indeed, and I sympathise wholeheartedly with Teresa, and know exactly what she's going through.
Yeah.
My husband passed away just in January past. And he was first diagnosed 12 years ago. But unlike Teresa, he was 70 at that time. And he passed away just a month before his 82nd birthday.
Oh, gosh.
I can associate with everything she's saying. And even I missed a little bit about, you know, the difficulties with getting Fair Deal scheme up and running and all the paperwork involved, etc. There have been times when I have worried physically about people who may not be able to do these things as I am, or, you know, Teresa or people like that. It must be a nightmare for them.
And remember, and I don't want to beat this.
Yeah, it actually would be. But the only suggestion that I could make there, which I found very, very helpful to me, was the nurse, Billy's nurse. I found she was very, very helpful and she had filled in the best part of everything for me. But I can understand where this lady is coming from, and it's through. Like, I'm sure there is people out there that just can't cope with that side. Yeah, I can understand it.
Could I just say now, yes, as well, Joe, I do a bit of voluntary work for the Alzheimer's Association of Ireland for the past couple of years.
Yeah.
I've got involved with Dementia Research Advisory Team.
Okay.
Which is a team that helps research projects all over Ireland into all aspects of Alzheimer's, its care, and the carers. And I act as what's called a PPI on that, a person and patient intervention. In other words, when academics are doing research and they're talking through their hats a lot of the time, I come along with the real story.
Okay, well done.
And put it straight. But we've been doing a bit of research ourselves into how diagnoses are given to people and how people are helped after that. And it's very much a hit and miss. And Teresa there was lucky, you know, with her nurse and everything like that. Yeah. That's not the story with everybody, unfortunately.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people are given the diagnosis and they're just, they leave the place in shock and there's nobody to tell them what to do next. So
yeah, that's true, because the only reason why I had kind of sailed through it the way that I sailed through it was the fact that I'd been working in that setting for years and years prior to that, so I knew what steps to take.
Absolutely.
But for anybody
we hear a lot from people, you know, on this group that I'm on, the Dementia Advisory Group. There are some members on it who have dementia, some with early onset dementia. They're carers, they're helpers. And you do hear, you know, a lot from them that this diagnosis, it just hits them. And they leave the doctor's surgery or whatever, and they don't know what to do. But, you know, you've been lucky because you sort of knew the inside track, I think, and it would have made all the difference. And also you knew how to handle things. I'm also doing a bit of work with the hospital here in Sligo, where they have a very active committee, where they're trying to make experiences in hospital better for patients and the carers of patients with dementia and Alzheimer's. And again, I've experienced this, you know, when you go to and I'm sure you have too, Teresa, when you go to an A&E with your loved one, when something has happened, it's a very difficult situation. Because they're all over the place. You're trying to keep them safe. You're trying to keep other people sort of happy that they're around them. And
that's true.
It's very common. Yeah. So the hospital here in Sligo are doing a lot to improve that situation. And again, I'm giving my input as the person who has lived through it.
Yeah. Well, stay with us if you would. And see, Teresa, I was thinking, I know I've been beating this drum for a long time, well, about a year now. We had people on saying that the fair deal is, and I understand paperwork, and they recommended going to the citizens' information bureaus. They were all over the country. And the great thing about the citizens' information bureaus was they you could tell them anything. Tell them anything. Tell them you had a mansion. You could declare, Teresa, your mansion in Portugal with the two swimming pools and the jacuzzi. And you could tell them whatever. And it was all confidential. It went nowhere.
How did you know
all
that about me?
I know. I'm watching you on Google Earth. And if they were then after COVID, they were all shut down. Then they campaigned mainly to this program. They're all volunteers to try and get back open. But I was talking to a few of them recently. It still is a mess. It still is a mess. And it's shameful what happened to our citizens' information bureaus. It really is. And there was no need to get rid of so many volunteers. Now there was a report saying, oh yeah, we need the volunteers back, but now they're putting extra restrictions on them. And I'm looking up some of the volunteer places, the citizen information, and the opening hours and the times when you can actually sit down for an hour and get information, they have been reduced dramatically. And there's no way anyone, Heather Humphreys, the minister, or anyone else can tell me otherwise. But anyway, people, there's still a lot of good people out there. Stay with us, Teresa. Stay with us, Brenda. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
So, Teresa, what's ahead for you and Billy, insofar as any of us know the answer to that question, for any of us? But what do you hope is ahead in terms of the best possibilities?
Well, I'm genuinely hoping, Joe, that they get Billy a bed in the nursing home, because as it is, I'm trying to get out to work. I have to try and get up to Loughton's Town to see Billy.
Yeah.
Never mind the diesel, the parking that you have to pay for, and that's every single day.
Yeah.
And even yesterday, he's flustered when his memory comes back, and he says to me, Teresa, what's going to happen? And I said to him, what do you mean, what's going to happen, Bill? And he says, am I staying here forever? And I said, no, not forever, honey.
Yeah, yeah.
You're staying here for a while till they get you a bed, and then you'll go into a nursing home. And he says, oh, thank God. He says, I love it here. He says, I really love it here. He says, but I want to go back, he says, to Rathdrum.
Yeah.
And for him to say that to me, Joe, a man to say that to his wife, he has to be contented and happy.
So he
loves it there, absolutely loved it there. And it was a shame I had to take him from the respite and take him home. And now he's in another hospital and he'll be transferred again.
Yeah.
And it's just a crying shame.
And how are you in all of this, Teresa?
I have my moments. His hospital bed went from the house yesterday. So I had a good old cry over that.
Wow.
It was watching the last of them going. But I hold up. I've got good kids there, and they keep me going. The grandkids keep me going. And my kids are pretty witty and funny, so they'll always, say something funny and bring me through it.
Okay. Well, lots of love coming in for you, Teresa, even from people that don't know you except through this radio programme in the last half hour. Lots of love coming in for Billy from people who worked with him over the years. And but he's still so young. He's only 67.
Yeah.
And he's had...
He's still such a lovely man, Joe. I promise you, you would never, ever meet a man like him.
Yeah.
Never, ever. He'd never say boo to anyone or about anyone. Never.
Philip Gavin is managing director of the Talbot Hotel Collection. Now, Philip has been on live. No, he hasn't been on live line before, but he's often phoned in to give a break for people who were going through difficulties or whatever in one of the Talbot Hotel Collections. So we persuaded him. Now he phoned in, he might as well come on. Philip, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
What are you thinking? Good times. What are you thinking listening to Teresa?
In the times that we're in, and to hear Teresa and the positivity in Teresa's voice, going through what she's been through for so many years, 14 years, I think, since Billy took ill first, it's encouraging for me, it's encouraging for everybody that's here with me today. And Teresa, really, you need a break. You need a break. You need to get some time on your own. You seem to have wonderful family supporting you. You must have wonderful family. So what I'd like to offer you is a two-night break for yourself and whoever in any of our hotels, wherever. I'll send all that on to Joe's researcher.
As usual,
And we'd love to have you, Teresa. I think somebody like you. You're one of life's unsung heroes, Teresa. You really are.
Oh,
and you
my
do it
God.
With
Thank
such
you.
Positivity.
So,
you really
much.
Do.
Yeah, oh, thank
all,
you so
welcome.
Much.
It's a small
God
reward for what
thank
you've
you
been
so
through.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
And Teresa, Philip is. And Philip,
God.
By the way, while you're on, thanks for all the unsung and the anonymous weekends you've given us over the years for people.
Not at all.
And you didn't ask for publicity. Philip, good evening, Margaret. Philip Gavin is managing director of the Talbot Hotel Collection. Teresa, we'll stay in touch, hopefully.
Crying.
Will you mind yourself driving? You're working, you're living, you're working, You're driving up and down to Loughlinstown every day. Will you be careful?
Yeah.
Take your time.
I surely will. And Joe, thank you ever so much for giving me this time on air. Thank you ever so much. And thanks to Philip. I wasn't expecting that. That was the, goodness me.
Okay. I tell you something. Teresa, Billy won. Yeah. Billy won the lotto the day he met you. And you you won the lotto the day you met him. But yeah, I think true. Billy now won the Euro Millions after a 15-week rollover.
Can I just say a great big massive thank you to the two carers that came in every morning, Carly Reid and Helena Garvey. They were great support to me, Billy, and my family and my children. They were great support, only for them, like, you know. So I owe them girls so much.
Okay. You know who I'm about to talk to after the break, Teresa, is the wonderful Glenn Hansard, the musician, the film star, the Oscar winner. There's no... we're going to have a chat with him after the break, because we were talking yesterday about musicals and successful musicals. But Teresa, you mind yourself and we'll keep in touch. If there's anything else think people can do... though I think when JFK made that speech in the White House 63 years ago, and he said, think not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. I think the only bit you heard was the second bit, what you can do for your country and your fellow people. You're an unsung. You know what I mean? By the way, when I said St. Teresa, what did you mean she'd have to be converted?
I'm the biggest people going. I'll have to say, Joe, I love life. Love life. I'll always look at the bright side of life.
Okay. Mind yourself, won't you? Petal driving and that.
Thank you ever so much, Joe. God bless you.
God bless you and
God
Billy
bless. Bye
and your
bye.
Family. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I mentioned yesterday we were talking about musicals, and was there any successful Irish musicals? And people mentioned Angela's Ashes, and they mentioned Michael Collins, and there's one about the famine. And there is also one about Bloody Sunday. I didn't know it until someone contacted me last night. But the most successful one, without a shadow of a doubt, is Once. Originally a movie and then turned into a musical, but based around the Glenn Hansard song, so to speak. And Glenn Hansard is on the line. Glenn, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe? Lovely to talk.
Likewise. Were you listening to Teresa there?
Oh, man, she's just amazing. God, do you know what? That's what I love about Liveline. The whole country gets to hear someone speak about a very, very personal story. And, of course, it rings out universally. It's gorgeous. She's amazing.
How long is it since your own mom passed?
It's 3 years, and actually, ironically, it was her birthday yesterday, and she died like tomorrow. So she died on the 14th, and we're actually burying her tomorrow again. Not burying her body, but she got cremated, and her sisters are all like, "We want somewhere to go visit her.
Okay,
where is she?
Okay.
We need a headstone. We want to go put flowers somewhere." Because she's on the mantelpiece in my brother's house, and they're not happy at all.
So, and where is she going to be interred?
She's going up to Mount Jerome, and beside me, dad,
Okay. Glenn, beside your dad, you've become a dad.
I've become a dad, Joe, and I'm sitting, and Christy's here in my arms, and he's listening to the phone. He's amazing, 10 months old.
Christy.
Oh.
That's not a bad singing voice. Better than his outfits at that age.
A lot would argue, you're right.
I'm conscious of Christy on your... By the way, who's he called after?
Well, I named him after my friend Mick Christopher.
Mick.
But of course, there's a bit of Christy Moore and there's a bit of Christy Dignam,
And
it's just a real Dublin name, and we wanted to give him a Dublin name.
What a gorgeous name. But tell us about how Once became the massive success as a musical.
Which, you know, it's amazing what happened, because John approached me many years ago.
John Carney had a
script called Busker, which was kind of loosely based on his, because John was in my band, and he always, he was always fascinated by busking and the kind of the honesty of it. Like, you know, you take out your guitar and you're kind of declaring yourself to the world that I'm a musician and I have a song to sing. And, you know, I remember my headmaster saying when I was a kid, look, he said, the great thing is Frankie Bourne, God bless him. He's not God bless him, he's still with us, he's a brilliant man. Saying to me, he said, look, busking is the bottom rung of the ladder. And if you want to start in the world of music, get on the bottom rung. Get in and learn and do your apprenticeship and do it properly. Because, you know, when I was growing up in the Holy Spirit School in Ballymun, great school, and Compton, Ballymun, it was, you know, we were kind of, you know, our kind of career guidance people were saying, you know, get a good apprenticeship, you know, get yourself a trade. And so in a way, the fact that I was into music, my headmaster was, but anyway, John had this script and he said, you know, I'm fascinated by the busking thing. And he wanted stories and I would give him stories. And he wrote this lovely romantic film based around a busker and an Eastern European girl. Okay. And so, you know, it was all, and it all came together. We wrote a bunch of songs. John really liked Falling Slowly straight away. He was like, I want this one. This will be kind of, I'm going to build a whole scene in Walton's music shop around that song. I need a song for the studio. I need a song for this. And basically, it was great for me because I was collaborating, myself and Marquetta and John were collaborating on these songs that he needed for certain scenes. So the whole thing happened super quick. I mean, some of the songs are really unfinished. And if you listen to them in the film, like the second verse doesn't make any sense because I hadn't got the lyric written, you know, or Marquetta hadn't got the lyric written on one of her ones. It was just, but there's a lovely kind of, like, we were being super creative, super fast. And there's nothing like a deadline, you know, because we're, you know, it was a song of ours and your mind's made up. And the deadline was tomorrow afternoon and we had to get it finished. You know? So there was just a great kind of great, powerful, creative energy around that film. And of course it was made without any permits, you know, it was made for €120,000.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing was very kind of guerrilla filmmaking and that energy is there in the film. And then of course it started kind of getting a bit of traction in the States, and it was showing in some of the indie cinemas. We went over to Sundance. We played the Sundance Festival. I remember, what's his name? The big Hollywood producer. It doesn't matter. Harvey Weinstein.
I remember Harvey Weinstein
coming to see the film and he said, I like this film, but I want a kiss at the end. And John was like, nope, not going to happen. And so we won the audience award at Sundance, and then it got picked up by Fox. And then the film did really well on a very small indie level in America. And that's when it kind of got picked up. I remember we were approached by Barbara Broccoli and the people who do James Bond. And they were like, we think this could actually fly on Broadway. You know, it might need a few changes. And then I remember meeting with John Tiffany and Enda Walsh, and Enda, who's a bloody genius, basically said to me, says, Glenn, we won't blow it. We're not going to turn your film into some schmaltzy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be beautiful and you have to trust me. And when Enda says that, you do, because I love Enda's work. So I knew we were in good hands.
So the movie's made, the songs are in it, and then Falling Slowly won the Oscar. Grammys. Is there an Olivier Award, Hollywood Music and Media Award, the Gillip? I think it's won in terms of the collection of awards. It's won between stage and film. It's pretty unique in the number of awards that it's swept up. But how did a movie become a musical, stage musical, Glenn?
Well, I remember we had a meeting with Fred Zolo and John Hart in New York, and they were like, look, we want to turn, we think your film has real, it's got a really simple story and we think we can stage it, you know. And I was kind of horrified at the idea, but you know, of course I was going to have a listen to them, and you know, these guys were making a pitch on us, and you know, and I was very nervous. And I think I think John was nervous, as maybe, I can't speak for him, but I think he was nervous too. Marquetta certainly. But Marquetta loves musicals. She grew up loving Jesus Christ Superstar. And she, you know, like the Hamilton show, I think she's seen it about 60 times.
Wow.
She loves musical theater. So for her, it was like, and I was really, really happy for her, because this was something she'd always wanted. And so you know, we just sort of said yes, and we sort of and when it fell into the hands of Enda Walsh, I kind of went, ah, great. So at least it's going to be well scripted, and it's going to be, the story will be well told. And then you kind of just have to let it go, and it went off. And the guy who played me was gorgeous, and you know, the girl was amazing, and then it just sort of grew into its own thing. And then we just stepped away from it and just enjoyed it from a distance, you know.
And it's still in New York, isn't it? Still going in places.
No, it's touring. It's touring now. I actually just saw it in Helsinki before Christmas.
Your partner's from Helsinki, from Finland,
yeah,
is she not?
Yeah, sorry, okay. Your wife.
Yeah, your wife. Yeah. Sorry, Maura. Yeah. So how did it go down in Helsinki?
It was beautiful, absolutely wonderful. And and the great thing is, what's really wonderful about all the productions of it is that the musicians are given a certain amount of freedom to just interpret the songs however they want.
Now,
they were singing all the songs in Finnish.
Okay.
And the way the text, the translations, because as you know, translation is a huge thing.
You
can't, a lot of the Dublinese that's in once, you can't really translate it. You just got to turn it into your own thing. And they did a spectacular job. I was actually really blown away by them. I've seen it in Tallinn, in Estonia. I saw it in Korea, in Korean. You know, just every so often you get invited to go just check in. Italy, Spain.
When you were there in Finland, did they announce at the end, like, the co-author is with us in the audience?
They did, actually, yeah. And I jumped up and did a song, and I love that. You know,
it's terrible to see you still crippled by shyness. Glenn, really is.
Well, that's just a bit of encouragement, isn't it?
And says you, if they hadn't called out your name, you would have stood up and said, excuse me, in Finnish or whatever.
My dad was fierce for that. He, there were certain pubs he wouldn't go to because they didn't call him up to sing. My dad loves singing, you know.
Where's that, the Towers in Ballymun or the Penthouse?
Yeah, the Towers at the Penthouse.
Yeah,
he was always winning the competitions.
Those were the days. But you were in The Commitments. Go back to the other musical. Roddy. I saw that in the Francis Xavier Hall, I think, back in the day. But
what a great experience.
So you were in. So you, what age were you when you were in The Commitments?
I was 19 when we filmed it, and then probably 20 when it came out. No, I mean, like, it's funny, isn't it? You know, here's the thing. You set off in your life on a path and you go, I'm going to be a musician, right? And you do it. And, you know, you work at it and you busk and you're in a band and you get signed and you make your first record and you tour. But actually, the funny thing is, the more we hold on to one idea of who we are, the more we might miss something. And what I'm trying to say here is the two big moments of my career, as in like the two kind of more defining moments of my career came through film. They didn't come through music. I mean, even though there was music in the film, you know, it's a funny thing. We hang on tight to these ideas of who we are or what we do. And actually, you know, it's just funny. You kind of just have to stay a bit open, don't you?
And are you saying, you did not predict at the time that your appearance in The Commitments and then the movie, your own movie, so to speak, and with John Carney, and that you didn't predict they were going to be as big and as long lasting as they've become.
Well, The Commitments definitely had a bit of energy around it because Roddy was so popular at the time, and also Alan Parker. Alan Parker was just such a big name. So The Commitments definitely had a sort of a sense of, think this could actually be it. And we all loved Bugsy Malone and Midnight Express, and his films always had kind of a popular edge. Whereas with Once, and with all respect to John and all of us, like, we were kind of half expecting to do a little bit of a tour and sell the DVDs out the back of the car. But it didn't go that way, thank God. No.
Yeah. Right. So where I know you're minding Christy, or no, you don't call your mind, you're loving Christy. You don't call looking after your own child minding. But you're on in Vicar Street tonight with Marquetta.
Yeah, myself and Mara are doing tonight and tomorrow night in Vicar Street, and it's been great. You know, we got together again about 3 months ago. We were like, you know what? Let's sing a few new songs. Let's not just make it all about that particular period. Let's write a few songs. And so myself and Myra and Christy have been going up to Iceland, where that's Max. Okay, you know, Max was all excited. And so we went up to Iceland and we've been working on new songs. And so we were like, let's do a few gigs. And then suddenly, bam, here we are. We're back doing gigs. And it's wonderful because she has her family over with her. And it's just a great, it's a really done, great.
So tonight is the first night in Vicar Street.
Tonight's the first night. Now, we're doing two nights in Vicar Street and then we go off to the States for a month. So tonight, the two nights in Vicar Street are kind of like our you know, warm-up gigs for the tour, yeah.
Yeah, wow, incredible. Will Christy go to States?
No, Christy, we've decided that, you know, he's not even one yet. We're going to keep his life very, very simple.
Okay.
And, until he's old enough to make that decision. You know what I mean? Like, you know, maybe when he's 3 or 4, he might be more excited about getting on a plane for 12 hours.
Exactly. I can't see. Oh, yeah, the poor child, if you get on and he doesn't understand why his ears are popping.
Exactly.
Lynn MacDonald wants to say hello to you, Glenn. I won't keep you too long, Dan. I'm conscious of I presume you have to go up to Vicar Street for a sound check.
Yeah, and look, in all honesty, I was making a cup of tea there in my to-go cup, and you guys called me and said, let's talk to Joe. So I'm delighted to be here, but unexpected. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Lynn MacDonald, quickly, you wanted to talk to Glenn
before
he runs the
Vicar Street. I just sent a quick email in, actually, for you guys to thank Glenn. And
okay, you go ahead.
I'm on. But Glenn, just want to say thanks so much for continuing with your music and bringing so much joy to people like Daisy. And you've gone out of your way,
Lynn.
Previously.
Ah.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. How's she doing?
So she's up and down. She's up and down. She's still exceptional. And you and Interference have continued to bring so much joy and a form of communication for me and my daughter. So,
amazing.
The bottom of my heart, you continue to bring us so much happiness. And watching you with Christy now, and Henry, Daisy's new little brother, has arrived. It's lovely to see that new role with you as well. You know, thanks, Glenn, for everything you continue to do.
And
best of luck for you and Marquetta, you know.
And listen, drop in tonight or tomorrow if you're free, if you get a chance.
I would love that tomorrow night. Yeah, I'd love that.
You're more than welcome.
Okay.
If you want to bring her in early, so she does not all the big crowd there, you can do that.
Brilliant. Oh, Glenn.
Because Daisy is a person.
There you go, guys.
Daisy is a personality in her own right, isn't she, Lynn?
Yes,
she's brilliant.
She's got her 70,000 Dublin followers now.
Yeah,
so.
I know she's been battling with Rett's disease, syndrome, as it's called, and scoliosis and other things as well. But she is an exceptional child, as you
were,
as an exceptional mother. And kind regards to Daisy and
thanks, guys,
and all the people that work with you, Lynn. Aldrin Fitzgerald in South Carolina, of all places, Anderson,
hey,
South
Joe,
Carolina. Aldrin, tell us what you want to say to Glenn Hansard
from
Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
I'm good, man. I'm good. I don't know how many years ago it was. I was busking under the Central Bank, you know, the wee arch there going down into Temple Bar.
Of course.
And I was actually singing. Yeah, I was singing Falling Slowly. And then some guy came up and started singing beside me. And I was like, who's this? I looked over and there was Glenn. I was like, okay. Sang the rest of the song. Shook
Sorry
my
about
hand.
That.
I was, no, it was good. The song kept going. You shook my hand. You were like, thanks very much. I was like, no, thank you. You went about your day. And I just stood there going, what in the hell just happened?
Ah, brilliant. Well, we live in a village, don't we?
I live in a village.
We do. I just say thanks very much for that. And you really made my busking career when you done that.
Okay. Aldrin Fitzgerald in Anderson, South Carolina. Glenn, when you mentioned that, is Christy still on your lap there? That Christy, you call him because you love the name Christy. And it's a very double, of course, Christy Brown. Christy Moore, obviously, you know, Christy's from Kildare, so to speak. Christy Dignam, of course.
Yeah.
But there was a Christy made famous by Maureen Potter. Do you remember Maureen Potter? Are you too young?
Of course I do, yeah.
Okay. Listen to this. This is her. And I wouldn't let Christy listen to this. He's so young. But listen to this. Play it sharp with a great Maureen Potter talking about Christy.
Come on, Christy. Time you were in bed. Don't tell me you're still doing your homework if you're an hour's at it. Have that pen, chew it down to the nib. And look at the ink you spilt on that tablecloth. and your father hasn't even read it yet. What are you doing? Sums! Sums! Don't mention sums to me after that sum you brought home last week. How long would it take A, B, and C to fill a bath with water if the bath had a hole in it? Of all the stupid ways of filling a bath, A with a dessert spoon, B with a pint jug, and oh yes, C had a bucket. But he had to keep climbing over a gate and spilling 24.9% of the water. They should have stuffed him and his bucket down the hole in the bath. A, B, and C indeed. No wonder they didn't give their real names. Three of them would have been locked up. And then your father, Professor Einstein, can't count to 21 unless he's naked. True. That's true. Let's do this some practical, says he. Take the coal out of the bath. Start filling, says he. And of course, I had to be C with the bucket. Climbing over the clothes horse and spilling 24.9% of freezing water all over me feet. We're going strong. The landing.
And she comes in. Christy comes back again later on, Glenn. But
brilliant. That's great. Thanks for that, Joe.
Do you remember those sums in the Holy Spirit?
I do very well. Oh, I do. God bless them.
And then you went to the comp. Down the road with Frank Bourne and Des Kelly and all that great
right.
crew.
Good people.
Glenn, can you stay for a sec? I'm conscious.
Okay.
I just have to get one break out of the way.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We're talking about successful Irish musicals, and Glenn Hansard is with us talking about Once, but the movie and the still touring musical. Bella, you, what do you want to ask Glenn?
Sorry, it's Della.
Della. Della.
Basically, I was wondering if Glenn remembers a very long time ago, about 25 years ago, he was playing with Aslan in a field outside Kilkee. So basically, there was a concert on, and they had Aslan and the Frames and someone else I can't remember. So we all bought these tickets because we couldn't believe that they were in Kilkee. So we bought the tickets and we got on this bus that brought us out to the middle of nowhere. We didn't know where we were going or what was going on. It was just the middle of nowhere. And next thing, we stood around waiting for this, and the heavens opened and it started lashing rain. And Christy and the band came out and said, "Come on in, girls." And we were like these groupies, right? So we basically went in and we were standing in this little caravan, like something out of Father's Head. And we looked out and here was Glenn Hansard. Now, I didn't know him at all, but he was there with the big red hair, standing in the rain, looking around, going, "What the hell? What am I doing here?" So we made them all come in to the tiny caravan, and it was literally like Father Ted. We were all inside this tiny caravan having the crack, and they were so nice, and we had great crack. And then the weather, it improved, and we went out and we had a great concert. We were stranded out there. We had to go to the concert. The bus wasn't coming back to collect us, and we had a great night with all the lads. And I was wondering if he remembered. He never played again there.
Yeah, but Della, that's 25 years ago. Glenn Hansard.
I have a great memory. Glenn Hansard, and
he's a new daddy. He's a 10-month-old.
I know,
he can't remember 25 hours ago.
I do remember.
He's come a long way.
That's brilliant. No, look, and you know, do you know why I remember? It's because of the weather. Like, one of the things I loved about those Irish festivals that you would do, or like, they were usually on the back of a truck. You know, they're back of a truck in suddenly like in the middle of Roscrea, or you know, and the heavens had opened. I remember one particular Frames gig in St. John's, down in Limerick, and the heavens. It wasn't just a bit of rain. It was like pummeled down just as we went on stage, and the audience just lit up. They just went pagan. They just went mental.
Crazy.
And it was that thing of like just bringing your bring all the energy, because what I love about the Irish audience is that they'll just have a brilliant time, and if it lashes rain, they'll even have an even better time.
We love our rain, you know.
And I love that. I do remember that. And Christy was very good to us, and he was very kind to us, and gave us brilliant advice. You know, like when we were, I remember being dropped from our first Island Records, our first label, and Christy was very gave us amazing advice at the time, going, you know, don't let this get in your way. Borrow a bit. You know, we were playing in Whelan's all the time. Borrow a bit of money, you know, from Whelan's, get it. You know, he was one of the people who was really helpful to us and gave us perspective and basically reignited our confidence. So I have a huge debt of gratitude to Christy. He was a beautiful man.
Yeah, he was so good. He said, go out there and bring those lads in. Everyone's getting, and we all went out and he made us bring, yeah. I was in charge then and I was bringing everybody in. We were all standing around just laughing our heads off. What, we'd no way of getting out of this
caravan.
Place. And he played through his tiny caravan. And then he got up on stage like that. It was the back of a truck and we had the best, the rain was pelting down. And we had a great concert. So
okay,
I'm very proud of you. Well done for doing so well. Well done. Thank you.
Nice well remembered, Dana. Good on you, Malcolm. Where is Mary Claire Ryan? What do you want to say? Oh, you're in a new musical. Tell us about it.
Hello, Joe. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Go ahead. What's the new musical called?
So the new musical is called In the Midst of Plenty. It's Amy Day wrote the musical. She's from America. Yeah. And we're in Belvedere College tomorrow night, and it's about the famine. So
in Belvedere College in Dublin.
Yes, it's
in the Gráinne Hunt is involved.
I was just going to say, Glenn. Yes, so Gráinne is in the show, and we're coming to see you tonight.
Oh, brilliant!
Brilliant. Gráinne is amazing. Gráinne is so what a great Irish talent. So and
I
yeah, because she told
fantastic.
Me all about the play. It sounds. Best of luck with that play. It sounds amazing.
And Mary, were you?
Thank you.
So you were listening yesterday, I hope, to the debate about should musicals be about tragedies?
Absolutely, they should absolutely be about tragedies, because sadness and all of this are emotions that we need to feel, and especially when there's music involved. You know, none of us feel an awful lot until we hear beautiful music, and the music that Amy has created to go with the story about the famine really evokes an emotion in us that sometimes a script and just an ordinary play can't evoke, you know. It really is a special piece, so I would highly recommend
That's Belvedere College in Dublin, is it?
Yes, Belvedere College tomorrow night. We're actually sold out, but we have still some complimentary tickets available.
Bravo.
If you or anyone would like to come, and we could offer them to a Ukrainian couple, since there was human acts of kindness happened yesterday, or for yourself, for anyone else that would like to come see us, because it's really taken off and we've had some wonderful audience reviews and we're touring since
That's
the start
great.
Of May. It really, really is special. Yeah, it's a beautiful piece because I suppose
And I know you're going to Mullingar, Cavan, Longford, Galway, Mayo, Sligo, Donegal, Derry, Roscommon, Carlow, Waterford, Tipperary and Dublin, and the musical is called In the Midst of Plenty,
and produced by Enchanted Cray Theatre. Yeah, so
well
it's a penultimate show tomorrow.
Well done.
And better look to Gráinne.
I'm sure. I'd say she's listening to you. Big shout out.
Mary, somebody is now telling me you worked on the Banshee of Inisherin.
I did, yes. I worked as standing actor for Siobhan, for Kerry Condon, who's a fellow Tipperary. I worked behind the scenes because I've lived out in the Iron Islands for the last 3 years, so I was lucky enough to work in it, and I also was in a couple of the scenes as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
You don't have another woman who made the sweaters, do you?
Yes, I do, actually. We can get you a discount, Glenn, if you want. If you want a sweater, I'll give you a discount.
I would love one of her sweaters.
Actually working in the sweater shop during the time of the movie, and I got all the cast and crew in, and sure, Barry Keoghan and Colin and everyone came in to...
We have that lady's name as well. Glenn, we'll pass it on to you. And you'd probably want a small one for Christy as well, will you?
Absolutely, no problem. We'll make it happen for you. Indeed.
Well, I went to see Damien Dempsey the other night in the Ivy Garden. That's like going to a Sean O'Casey play with songs, you know, because it's just he is just such a living embodiment, a bloody legend, the man.
I see.
A living embodiment of
Well, Glenn, if you're around tomorrow night, please come and see our show. Well, I'm not sure you're in the swell.
Have you got a babysitter for him, Mary Claire? He's a 10-month-old baby. He never gets out when he's in Vicar Street tonight.
Okay. I can make that happen too.
Okay. John Fallon, briefly, John.
Thank you.
Hello,
thanks,
Joe.
Mary Claire. You met Glenn when?
I was to say, if you want to hear Glenn playing for free, come to the Wren's Nest on a Tuesday night. Glenn discovered us a while ago when he drops in on a Tuesday night now and he was there last Tuesday.
Oh, that's
played
the end.
A couple of tunes with us.
That's the end of
you're,
it now.
You're
isn't
not supposed
it?
To tell anyone about that. That's a ruin now.
That's it, okay. Johnny.
I
love it.
We appreciate
you, know what, Joe,
Glenn, and you're a lovely guy, and you come in and join in with us. Thanks for having me.
Because I don't get... I got you, John. How are you? I'm brilliant.
John plays the banjo.
Well, it's not often that you get to just sit in on a session and just be another of the singers. And because the thing is, like, one of the funny things about being known is that there's an expectation there for you to be someone that you don't want to be or whatever. Sometimes I fully embrace that. But I just love to be able to sit down, listen to those tunes. Yeah. What I love about that session is just a bunch of musicians showing up. There's no egos involved. There's no one trying to be flash. Everyone's supporting each other. There's about 20 musicians. There's actually more musicians in the pub than there is people just going to have a drink.
Yeah.
And I just love what you do. It's just so generous. And that's the spirit. That's every time I go there, I remember why I do this thing.
And I know it's years since I've been in there. Am I getting mixed up? Is it the Wren's Nest or the Strawberry Hall that's run by the two?
Both of them are great sessions. The Monday night in Strawberry Hall is Fiacre Gaffney's gig, and it's amazing. And the Straw Hall, and then down to the Wren's Nest.
Well, which one is still run by? Is it two sisters that still run one of them?
The two sisters are in the Wren's, yeah.
In the Wren's,
okay.
And they're still going strong, are they?
Oh, it's amazing. What a great bar. Yeah. It could be anywhere in Ireland.
Okay, they're all in.
I just want to say, Jim Jackman from RTE, ex-RTE sound man, is our WhatsApp coordinator. He gets all of us together.
Ah, great. Yeah. You must add me to it.
And Jim is a sound man, I can tell you that. Okay, John, good to meet you tomorrow. Now remember, people, I know everyone must have flocked to the Wren's Nest on Tuesday, but Glenn is going to the States very soon. Dara, what do you want to say to Glenn Hansard and Christy, his son?
Am I on?
Yes.
Sorry, my phone was beeping for you. How are you, Glenn? Big fan.
How are you there? Thanks very much.
I've seen you live about 20 times, seen you at the Frames, like your 20th anniversary gig, And my two class memories from a Glenn Hansard gig I'd love to share. So one is in Vicar Street, probably about 8-9 years ago, and I think he came down into the crowd after the gig with a guitar, and everyone was kind of, there was a circle around him, and some guests stood with me, at least Hennigan, I think, was there, and a few of the others, and he played till maybe 1:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And it was just, I've never been at a gig quite like that, so I don't know if you remember that one, Glenn.
Well, I just remember nights like that. There, just nights when you're just when the spirit takes you and you just no getting off. Yeah. And we've kind of developed a bit of a name in Vicar Street. Every time we go in there now, Jake says to me, "Now listen, lads, we have to finish up here by 1:00."
And then there's another great memory. It was a couple of years ago. It was in a field in the middle of Leitrim or Leash or something. It was a big top tent, and there was no bus on or anything like that. It was just random venue, and I remember I reached out to Glenn's Twitter account, and the manager got back, and I said, "Look, if I rent the coach and get people coming down from Dublin, can you help me out with the price of it? You know, if I charge people and I don't make enough money back to cover the cost of the coach." And Glenn's manager at the time said, "Oh yeah, look, if you're short on the night, come and find me,
and
I'll give you the difference to pay the coach."
Wow, fantastic! And Dara, you want to know what time, Glenn? What time's the show start
at
tonight?
It's well season, yeah.
And Glenn, tonight is it you and Marquetta from the get go, or is there support act?
No, it'll be Eve. I know. I can't remember first or second name. God, my apologies. No, but there's a couple of young buskers open up for
brilliant.
Nights. Tonight is a busker that Marquetta picked, Aoife. Now, God bless, I wish her revenge.
Okay, well, Aoife's enough,
And then tomorrow night is Dylan Harcourt, two brilliant buskers that we just loved. So yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Bernie McDermott, quickly before we get Glenn down to Vicar Street for the sound check, he's to do a bottle feed with Christopher. He's to do it with Christy. He's to do a nappy change. He's to get him enrolled in the Montessori in Chapel Lizard, and then he has guitar lessons starting at 6 o'clock. Bernie McDermott, quickly.
Very, very quickly, I'd just like to say thank you very much for the song. I never heard of Glenn. Sorry about that, Glenn. I'm a little bit older. Never heard of the song until just over 2 weeks ago. We had a little grandson that didn't make it. And when I was organising the funeral, I said to my daughter, is there anything you'd like? Obviously, she said no and everything. And she came back the next day and she said to me, there is one song I'd like. And it was Falling Softly. Never heard of it until then.
I'm so sorry to hear it.
And I have to say, everybody loved it, and you know, it's fabulous. As the girl before you said, music, you know, even the tragedies and everything is what gets you through. And just say thank you.
Listen, God bless, and thank you for saying that. I wish, because ever since we had Christy, I'm in bits if I hear any news like that.
We had Brogan for 5 weeks. Bless. We were very lucky because
Bernie,
what was
your grandson's name?
Brogan.
Brogan.
Brogan Sword.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Big, strong, strong name.
We'd sing it for him tonight. We'd sing it tonight for Brogan, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. That'd be lovely. Thank you very much. All right, thanks again for the music.
Bye now. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Words fall through me and always fool me, and I can't react.
I hope you remember, Glenn, and I hope Marquetta does as well, how much joy and memory and connection and community and family and love that you bring into so many people's lives with your art. It is just incredible. Look after yourself, Glenn. It's great to hear you as a dad. It's great to hear Christy. That's his first time on radio there. You sounded in great form. And I just want to play a minute or two, if I can, of Mick Christopher's Heyday, because as you know, the lyrics are just so moving. Will you introduce this, and we'll record it and send it to you and put it in his little memory box. This is Glenn Hansard introducing Mick Christopher at a song called Hey Day, and the connection, of course, is the name Christy. Go ahead, Glenn, and thanks again.
Well, as Mick Christopher used to say when he was alive, God bless him, he used to always say when he was introducing this song, he said, this song is about every day being your best day, and we'd like to dedicate it to Billy and Teresa.
Okay. A little call to the right. Thanks to Glenn and Christy Hansard and more indeed, Vicar Street tonight. Today's programme was produced by Brendan Dunn, who Ray Darcy is next. This is Mick Christopher. Just as friends. This is our heyday, baby. And we're not gonna be afraid to shout. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.